You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. This is Radio Tacoma, Sound Poetry, on KTAH 101.9 LP FM. We are really pleased and grateful that you have come to spend some time with us here, Martha. Martha Solano is going to read from some of her poems, but I first would like to tell you who Martha Solano is, if you haven't heard her name. She's well-rounded in all sorts of poetry, has many books, Reckless Lovely, the title of one, Little Office of the Immaculate Conception, Gravity Office. And was The Gravity Office the best poetry book of the 2019 Blogger's Choice, or was it yeah, the best poetry book?
It's a claim to fame there. The bloggers voted it one of the best for 2019, which was very, very lovely to hear.
That is a wonderful thing to receive.
I mean,
hold out there.
And you'll have the bloggers love.
That is a wonderful thing to receive from the world out there.
And you'll have the bloggers love.
And this doesn't count, of course, all the many poems that you've got in foremost journals and collections. And you're still teaching at Bellevue College, I imagine, through a Zoom method these days.
Yeah, I'm an online instructor primarily, so I'm teaching there. I'm also, this fall, I'll be the teaching at Hugo House in Seattle as the master class. Mm-hmm. So David Wagner is retiring, and I am going to be doing that in the fall. So I'm very excited. And that will be on Zoom, I believe, in the fall as well.
Is that a fall or an all year?
That's an all year. I think it goes 10 weeks and then break and then 10 weeks. And I think I'm on for the whole year. So I'm really excited about that. And I think they'll start advertising for that soon. I just put in my description and I'm super honored to be doing that.
That'll be a great project for a year, will it not?
Yes, yeah. I'm excited.
Also, there is this item of the daily poet. You are the daily poet, but you have written about day-by-day prompts for your writing practice. And you had a helper with this, Kelly Russell Agada?
Yes.
Yes? And how did that come about?
Well, Kelly's always got an idea, and we had little kids at the time. I think our kids were, and mine were probably like 3 and 8, and our kids are the same age, our older kids. And she said, oh, come on, even if it takes us 10 years, we're going to do this. We're going to write a prompt for every day of the year. And she said, I'll publish it. I'm going to start a press to do it. And I thought, who is this lady? I've known her now for 20 years, but we were new friends. And so we would get together and work on these and then send each other every few months some more. And then we'd kitchen test them and see how they were. And we finished in 2013. And so it came out later that year. And I'm really, really glad we did it. We've been talking about Daily Poet 2 for about 5 years now, and I'm about a third of the way through, but she's just had a book accepted by Copper Canyon, and so she's kind of busy with her own. But we have a Thursday night poetry club, and we do it on Zoom, and for 2 hours we do 3 prompts and we read, and so we're constantly making new prompts. We have enough prompts for 10 books, but it's just a matter of when we come out of quarantine, maybe we can get Poetry Daily 2 going. But the first one is still very much in print, Two Sylvia's Press. You can find it on Amazon. You can find it at the Two Sylvia Press website. It's being used in a lot of classes. It's always exciting to me to hear from people and endorsing it.
Well, could you suggest to the listeners today a day-by-day prompt that you have off the top of your head?
Today is June 8th. Okay. Decade on the wall. Choose a decade and write a poem about that era, evoking that specific time period's fashions, hairstyles, slang, dance crazes, etc. For inspiration, read Rose Kelleher's Free Bird excerpt here. Let sideburns rain, let white guys wear cologne, let jeans reveal who's well and fully grown. From groin to groove, it's like a manhood fest. And we had reached out to this gal, Rose Kelleher, and asked if we could use this excerpt, and she was thrilled. So that's June 8th, Decade on the Wall. My copy is really dog-eared and falling apart, but you can get a brand new copy.
Oh, thank right? you.
Yeah.
Decade
on the Wall.
Yeah. For the decades to come, which is a wonder what it will be.
I know.
Yes, well, I got a daily prompt this morning when I read your Beatitudes after Fellini. But perhaps you'd like to begin with a more acute poem that has coherence, Surpassing Danger, for example.
Ooh. Okay, yeah, Surpassing Danger. Surpassing danger has always been impossible. The body, a spruce root basket, a twined bag woven from husks. Though hard for me to say, this I, this sugar cube of silence, motionless plinth rising just east of where it gets ugly. Don't own it. Can't know the yellow and black police tape surrounding the Quick Mart. Traffic nuisance on my way to visit a friend in Renton. Danger I drive by, don't live by. Tap my brake at the four-way. Sail by Rainier Beach High, Henderson and Cloverdale. Streets equaling stay away. Not my music, not my winter lion. Surpassing anything has almost always been a lie. Though the catch is the almost, keeps ice crystals from forming on a life. When the storm drains in reverse, seawater gushing into the streets, when a red moon tide is not what's causing the seepage from underground, when five-star service, when having it all cannot contain the inundation, when water creeps up driveways under security gates, floods Lexus SUVs and Mercedes. Hundreds of millions will know surpassing danger is like surpassing one's impossibles, one's moon jelly self. Whose dead will float by like the bodies loosened by Hurricane Agnes in the wake of the Susquehanna? Not my people or their epic poems, not my thesis on the history of the bird. Not a one of my besties, my darlings, not my beloved.
Yes. The interesting idea of it's always been impossible. Surpassing danger has always been impossible. But now, surpassing every day with every half a decade, we get more impossible, the surpassing.
I know. And I wrote this, probably started it 2 or 3 years ago when I was first beginning to explore my whiteness and my privilege. And yesterday I did a protest march. It was a very peaceful protest march. And I was on Henderson and Cloverdale with 10,000 people. And it was very peaceful and very not ugly. And yes. So it's my neighborhood. You know, it is not that far from me. There was that feeling of that line, that feeling of not belonging on both sides, white and black, it felt different yesterday, like we were together. Not that I should be able to earn that so quickly, but you know what I mean? There's a sense of if all of us do this together, we might surpass our impossibles.
Yes. How we have been divided has helped unite us.
Well, I was thinking, as I said to my husband the other day, if Obama had stayed, if we had a similar figure, we might not have gotten to this point. It takes resistance to make that next big step to help those who need it the most. And it, you know, in a way, it's this weird, okay, so there is something positive about resistance and anger and saying enough is enough. We can't live this way anymore.
Yes, the revelation of our culture that has gone on has helped us to see more clearly and frightened us all the more at the depth of it.
Yeah, and it was so moving yesterday to see so many people out
it
there.
I went myself too into coma. It was
a good
number, and it was quite impressive, really. Yes, to listen to the voices, but also to enact the don't shoot, to lie on the ground for eight minutes.
Oh, you did that.
40-odd seconds, yeah.
Wow.
Impressive kind of acting out, bringing it closer to home. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're writing about a good bit about your whiteness and privilege in some of these. I imagine the metaphor of this sugar cube of silence. The sugar cube whiteness, I suppose metaphorical there of I, the silent sugar cubed individual. Yes.
Just
square as a little dice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good, very good. Now,
thank you.
I love that one for its topicality, even though you say it was written some years ago, but it does bring forth some of your doubts and your sense of humility, if not at times a humiliation.
That's
but
a good
sheltered when you found your humanity, sheltered I found.
Oh.
My humanity is another one I think that struck me very much.
Sheltered, I found my humanity. What does that even mean? In shelter, I thought of Ujima, Mother of Heaven, the girl who, when my daughter walked in at noon on the first day of kindergarten, said, "Hi, what's your name? Hi, Ruby, I'm Heaven. Let's line up together." Over by the portables, beneath two redwoods, Ruby and Heaven jumping rope, playing tag and tetherball, climbing the monkey bars. Their teacher, Miss Harris, hailed from Mississippi. Her color I definitely saw, like black coffee. Coffee and humanity at that brick school, bustling with braids and burkas, with the strict enforcement of uniforms to deter the drive-by shootings, the Crips and Bloods who attended our sweet little elementary school. Our kids could wear khakis, but the white shirt they paired them with had to have a collar, and the navy pants could never be blue jeans. Each Friday, I greeted the teachers with Starbucks and homemade muffins, discussed with the other moms how we'd fashion ankle-length skirts for the Muslim girls so they'd be both uniformed and adhering to their cultural dress code. But I'm sorry, I don't sew. Carried the coffee from my car, wiped the crumbs from the fold-out table, lugged it back to the cafeteria. And what do I want? An effing medal? And did I see color? Yes, I saw color. No, I was not colorblind. So who am I? An anecdote to sweep away with the muffin crumbs. But was I listening? Yes and no. Yes. To the generalized notion of a rainbow, no to even one story of a micro or macro. Ready to what? Commiserate, be hopeful, to assume we're all here to overcome, to heed the words of MLK, the first step up the staircase in the dark. On the last week of third grade, a flyer came home in all our kids' backpacks. Monday, sports day. Tuesday, spirit. Wednesday, twin day. It was a no-brainer. Ruby and Heaven would be twins. Who else but her bestie? They figured out their outfits. Fancy, non-uniform church dresses, matching barrettes, the same white Mary Janes. And wasn't that a special day? Ruby and Heaven in Heaven. I mean, on the playground holding hands, like MLK said. But not so quick, white lady. And weren't you colorblind? Did you not see color? I saw Heaven's shining, beautiful skin, that she'd have to push through doors till they fell off their hinges, doors my daughter would saunter through. And am I fragile? Yes, I'm fragile, crying as I type this, my white privilege blowing through me, around me, like the wind off the lake, like the lake we white people swim in, do anything but drown in, forcing everyone else to swim through our white caps and wakes, catching them off guard, slamming into their faces, leaving them gasping again and again, while we welcome the surges, the next one, the next, whooping it up in the friendly, comfortable surf. Can't see the lakes, not clear, not colorless, but a culture, a syndrome, a condition, a sickness. We pulled our daughter from that school, couldn't let her, had the privilege to not let her fall behind, moved her to a little white school a little farther north. God, it's cold along this lake. I miss you, Heaven. I miss you, Ujima. What kind of friend was I? The kind who did not ask.
Very, very interesting poem. Ferlinghetti, did you enjoy the poets? I mean, he is very different in some respects from the Beats, even though he belonged to their company. Did you find him a favorite poet at one time?
Well, he kind of has just kind of come in and out of my, he's always kind of there since probably very beginning when I started writing in my late teens, probably. So every once in a while, a poem of his will pop up, like on his birthday, or I have some of his books. And so I think it's dated, its poem is over 3 years old, but it was soon after the election, soon after the inauguration, and we, that spring break, we took a trip down to the Southwest. We did 3 national parks. Now, I worked on it for 3 years. It just got accepted at North American Review. But I wanted to, I don't know if they really are Beatitudes anymore, because there might be a specific syllable length, but I just kind of tried to pay homage to Ferlinghetti in these 12 moments, images.
I did look through my Ferlinghetti books, but I didn't have this anyone that had Beatitudes. Are you going to read the number
sure.
one?
Is it okay if I don't read the numbers out loud?
I don't think you have to. It gives them a haiku quality.
Do you like the numbers?
No, I don't care for the numbers.
I don't either.
And I think that these moments of being, of a poetic line or a poetic vision, are what work very well in this, yes.
Thank you. Okay, I will read it. Beatitudes from the Heart of the American Southwest, after Lawrence Ferlinghetti, April 2017. At the Mandalay Bay wave pool, a guy I mistook for a skinhead wearing a Make America Hate Again t-shirt. Outside a shimmery gold tower, a cop questions 2 weeping brown girls crouched amid an opulent bustle. As the cabbie explains, Vegas is more of a family destination. A mobile billboard cruises by, hot girls direct. Trump, Pence on every 3rd billboard until we reach the outskirts of hurricane. Resist. In Flagstaff, a stratovolcano dormant for 200,000 years follows us out of town. The locals say a sunbeam secures it to the ground. At the South Rim, selfie sticks, Maybelline Dream Wonder, beige pantyhose. A man in ripped jeans bares his ass for his girlfriend's camera. A condor rose past Bright Angel Lodge as dozens of tourists' backs turn, stand in line for waffle cones. In Colorado City, where the average household size is 8, we sample the polygamy porter. During World War II, the Navajo language satisfied the requirement of an undecipherable code. Trained as Marines, hundreds of Navajos fired off thousands of inscrutable messages in their native tongue. Kaibab limestone, Coconino sandstone, hermit shale, basement granites, schists. 1.8 billion years of rock. There are Christians who insist the Grand Canyon is proof of Noah's 5,000-year-old flood. At the Weeping Wall, yellow warblers trill in the box elder. My son, an avid despiser of birding, spots a dipper in the Virgin River. Desert mallow, sore-eye, poppy, pink-eye flower, mal de ojo. 3 nights until the moon is full.
Anyway. Great moments.
Oh, thank you. It took a long time. Like I said, I worked on this poem for a good year after the trip. I put it away for a year or two. I thought I could never finish it. It was just a matter of I needed to keep refining and refining. Just getting it to the images, no commentary. I just kept cutting and condensing and just getting the essence was my goal. If you look at earlier versions, you'll see just a lot more junk. You know, it just had to get it down to, it was very satisfying to finally finish it.
Yes, you had a great deal of fun, wit. You put your wit into wonderful snapshots of a road trip. It's a road trip poem.
Yeah, I mean, and all of it is, I couldn't make it up, right? It's all stuff. Everything from that resist sign and hurricane to trying out the polygamy porter. We had another polygamy encounter that was even weirder, but I kind of feel like it should be a whole poem. I'll save it for another time.
One you couldn't.
There's a strange town in southern Colorado, let me just tell you. There was a cult. It was a cult. And I read about it when I got home. Someone's written a book about it. But anyway, I'll save that. Anybody who's interested can look it up.
Well, a friend of mine said that he'd like to hear from the lives of the poets that I interview more. And I thought, well, maybe poets want to have some experience performing their poems too.
Well, I love this that you're keeping me reading, because I have done interviews where I've read one short poem and we end up just talking about whatever we're excited to talk about.
Well, I like so many of the poems here that with lines like the dogs are practically walking themselves.
Oh, yes.
So much.
Thank you.
These days where people are letting their dogs go out for a while because they've been on so many walks, it's time for the dog to go and walk itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to hear that.
Never come out of quarantine.
Yeah.
Do you want me to read that one?
Out of quarantine. That would be, a most appropriate poem for you to read as sort of, well, maybe a conclusion, a resolution. Yeah.
Sounds good. Why I may never come out of quarantine. I like the way gnats circle above the grass, like they know more than we do. At the park where everyone's walking, running, sunning, I hardly notice the distance, the masks, like the families with their picnic baskets and rafts. The blossoms, even when they're drying up, someone in our neighborhood has been making blossom mosaics with dandelions, camellias, and what all else. The dogs are practically walking themselves. the boat's so alive, alive, alive. I'll take you to a place where you can visit all the major Cascade peaks, where a bald eagle swooped over me, its white head and tail like icing on a black forest cake. Today I'm hearing the downy woodpecker, the trilling junco. I've learned better how to say sorry, a better way to cry and ask and listen and ask what else. Learn to savor the scent of dirt and rot. I've found a spot in my front yard to stretch my legs, read the one piece of mail. I've listened to my neighbor share his feelings about fear. He says when his time comes, that when the time is half a rainbow in a blue-gray sky. And do you think those clouds could be heading our way? 1 billion pounds of potatoes waiting to be picked, but no one's eating fries. And do I feel remorse for the pickers, the slaughterers, for the hair trimmers, waxers, the one who hunched at the portable sink trimming my nails? How dare I say this time is better, is best? But I can't return to the way things were. Can't go back to the get over it's and cry me a rivers. Can't be silent like the shuttered holiday spa. So many can't swim in that fancy pool where the white people swim. I think it's called the silver cloud. I think it's called suffering. When this is over, I'm not going back.
Right on. Yes.
Yeah.
Martha Solano, we have been hearing her wonderful poems, poems of the day, and marvelous images they are. Thank you so much, Martha, and I hope to speak with you another time. I've got you in my phone right now.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me on the show. This is wonderful.
You are very much fun. Thank you so much. Your poems, very insightful.
Well, thank you very much.
You have been listening to Sound Poetry with Martha Solano. I am your host, David Gilmore.